yesterday. Was moderately well attended. He was a very funny author. He does rhyming poetry, I guess is the best way to describe it. It's kind of in the order of Dr. Seuss, but it's on all kinds of subjects, serious, funny, all that sort of stuff. So he was pretty good. And our next author event will be Todd Borg on Monday, October 23rd, introducing his latest book about Owen McKenna at the Lake Tahoe. The only other thing, in case any of you were wondering what was going on in front of the building the last couple of days, we had a water break under the parking lot. So they did have to dig up the parking lot and go in and replace a piece of pipe. So hopefully that is all fixed now.
Excellent. Thank you, Phyllis. Moving on to item 5, the Library Board of Trustees meet business. Starting with item A, presentation and discussion on the proposed code of conduct wording.
Amy Lauder, Collection Development Manager, for the record. This code of conduct,
Diane, can you click on it so then they see
the thing?
And the wording.
Mm-hmm. Also in the packet, but now it's on the screen. Great. We started talking about putting together a library code of conduct back in June when we had a session with Dr. Steve Albrecht, who is an expert in law enforcement and libraries, which is a really great combination of fields to have available. And he is an expert in library security, and we were able to discuss with him some of the challenges that we face specifically in our community and our library. And one of the tools that he suggested that has been successful at other libraries is having available for patrons a code of conduct and potentially posters around the building with expectations for behavior that are recorded in a positive manner. So what we have in your packet is both a written code of conduct document, which is based on our library policy, and also an example of a design for a poster that Natalie put together that we could post around the building. As I said, it's mostly bringing out some of the, you know, our library policy isn't posted directly for people to see, you have to kind of go find it. So this kind of puts kind of some of our common issues that come up with behavior, with belongings being abandoned, or expectations for supervision of children, interactions with staff, kind of puts those front and center so that we can, you know, it's very obvious for people how to behave in a library if they are not 100% sure. I really want to focus, I put at the top of the written document, straight from the policy, it kind of really summarizes what the expectations are, a library environment free of unruly activity, confidential access to library material, materials that are complete and not defaced, and surroundings free from tobacco products, electronic smoking devices, and litter. So it's a place that is clean and calm and friendly and a good place for people to be. And I think that's consistent with what we all want to create. And this will just kind of make that super clear to everybody and hopefully make the library a more peaceful and happy place for everybody. Are there any questions about this document?
I have one note on
it.
When we were discussing and working with Amy on the code of conduct, we wanted to make sure that it wasn't a no, don't do this, not this. It's very positive of do this, enjoy this, so that it's a positive message being sent to the public.
And that, again, is with the intention that if we're going to put something in our building, in our walls, we want it to be happy and consistent with this effort to make it a peaceful and happy place. So we don't want to have no, don't, these are all the horrible things you can do. Be like, this is how you deal with situations. This is what we expect. This is what's going to make this a good experience for everybody here.
Okay. I think this makes sense. Are there any questions or discussion?
I just wonder if this is the size that we're going to be posting.
I think the goal, we were talking about larger, this is pretty small to fit in the packet. We were talking about kind of like 2x3 larger poster size that we can put on the walls in the different library areas.
Thank you.
I think this is really good. It's colorful enough that it attracts your eye. However, in the store, we've had a lot of experience with nobody reads any sign you put up. So, good luck.
I'm familiar with that phenomenon as well. Yes, but we can all. It'll be nice to have it there. So, if somebody says you in what army, we can say, look, it's right there.
We do also have a captive audience when we are shuttling people in our elevator upstairs and downstairs, and so we plan on putting this in the elevator as well. Because there's not much more to do than read in there.
Perhaps a colorful border around the edge instead of white. I don't know, red, brilliant, orange, fluorescent green, something. Yes.
So some of the complaints that people have had with like noise levels and stuff, is this going to address any of that issue?
For noise levels, we're not changing our policy or our not policy. We don't have a noise policy. What we do enforce is disruption. We do not allow. We've had trouble with especially teens and sometimes other people cursing in the library, and that makes it not a nice space. So yelling and cursing and knocking things over is not acceptable. Talking loudly, as long as it's not trying to intimidate somebody, we don't really have a problem with. It's really not a noise thing, it's a disruption thing. So as long as, you know, everybody's good, the noise is not an issue.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right, if there are no further questions or discussion, I would entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we accept this code of conduct and put as many of these signs up as you can find a place for.
I'll second.
Okay. Those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Thank you very much. Moving on to item B, presentation and discussion on proposed social media policy.
Natalie Wood, Creative Learning Manager, for the record. So this social media policy supports and follows the Carson City social media policy that we already adhere to. It just defines it further for the Carson City Library. We already utilize various social media platforms, have for a long time. It's just to help us identify and utilize those with a consistent manner. Any questions on that? Or probably need a few minutes to read it.
So is this mainly to keep it consistent about what you use on your social media as far as logos and Facebook, Twitter, all that sort of stuff? It's all the same?
Yep, what we use it for, and also if patrons are engaging in social media with us, then we have something to support how they utilize it and what they use it for. So if someone's using inappropriate language or they're marketing on our website, we have something that supports it's for library purposes only, and it supports that. So it's to define that and give clear guidelines. This was based off of another library's. We worked with Jenna, our intern, our social media intern. She assisted in some of this before she left, and also a social media class that a couple of our staff took. So it's based off of a few different things to support.
And then I did want to add, we also have a social media procedure that goes along with the policy. So the procedure is how staff will handle some of these pieces, but that's not necessarily in the purview of the board, in the sense that the policy is what the board is approving, and the procedure is what us as a management team want our staff to follow. Again, that procedure is in accordance with what this policy is, as well as what the city policy is. This just, again, reiterating what Natalie said, prevents, you know, spam bots using our social media inappropriately and being able to remove any of that if necessary. That's that public terms of use. Or if it's not a spam bot and it's just an internet troll, same deal there.
So Diane has just pulled up the procedure side of it. And that just goes into detail about, like, how often we will, what we will do, hashtags to use, and just kind of our procedure to support utilizing them throughout the library to promote programs, functions, services. Short and sweet, to the point.
Yeah, I think that anything that lends more consistency to the information that we're getting out there is good. So, if there are no further questions or discussions, I would entertain a motion.
I was just going to say, being consistent in what you're putting out there makes it a little bit easier to spot those people that might be trying to use your stuff to get their message out.
Yeah. I'll move to approve the social media policy.
I'll second.
All right. Those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Thank you, Natalie. Moving on to item C, presentation and discussion on proposed self-directed learning policy for library staff.
Okay, so what you see here, I mean, it is short and sweet. What we wanted to address here is, it kind of came out of some of our coaching with Diane Hansen, but also some of our staff development days prior to that. We wanted to make sure that staff felt that they would be able to work on learning, not just their position, but different pieces of their position and what the library does and what the resources the library has to offer consistently and on a more frequent basis than just a staff development day. And so what this is meant to do is it's not taking staff off desk, but staff, every full-time staff member does have off-desk time that they can work on other projects or take a webinar or do a class, those pieces. And so this is essentially asking that each week staff take an hour to do those types of tasks. So it could be a webinar. If they're taking a class, it might be an hour a week. It might be more than that, depending on what the class is. Participate. We have, I would say, hundreds of free online webinars that the State Library provides kind of in a calendar for us. All the library resources in one, so that we can do those or practice using a library's device or practice using a resource that we have. So it may be working on OverDrive and being able to download OverDrive and use OverDrive, and then they can then help a patron with that task. It might be viewing a webinar. So it's really open to whatever they feel that they want to work on. And in coordination with their managers, making sure that we have that time to do that. Because we're all busy, and we've got a lot going on at the library, but I want to make sure staff are taking time to learn about our resources for our patrons. Are there any questions?
Now, do you foresee this policy as being, is this a mandatory hour, or they have the opportunity for an hour?
So, I mean, it doesn't say mandatory, it doesn't say optional in it. Mm-hmm. I would prefer them to do so. I mean, if you don't know how to use a Kindle, you should learn how to use a Kindle if you're working in the library. And I think that this gives us the ability to do so. when I say at the last bullet point, other activities assigned by the director or manager supervisor on your annual performance appraisal, those would end up being mandatory so that they would be able to complete their performance appraisal opportunities. What is that word? Objectives. Objectives is what it's called on there. So I mean, those pieces would definitely be more mandatory than, say, viewing a webinar. I don't want to specify what they have to learn, because I think that giving them the opportunity to learn different things is what's going to make our library thrive.
Under the second bullet point, could you explain what 23 things is, please?
So one of the items that we're working on, we have what's called LibGuides, and we're working on it's essentially a website that will have different weekly learning points, and there'll be 23 items, and they're going to be just different things in the library. And so we're going to curate essentially kind of an hour-long tutorial or access to that tutorial for, let's say, OverDrive. So one of those 23 things might be OverDrive. 23 things is easy, and it's easy to accomplish. Like, if you're like, hey, I want to learn these in this month, that's something that you could go through in that month to learn about. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you say there's 23 different things every week?
No, it's just going to be 20. It's a page that's going to have 23 different things on it. That doesn't mean they have to complete it in a week.
No, I understand that.
Yeah.
But do they change from week to week?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I thought you said. Sorry.
Just have a question for other staff members. Have you had any input from the people who work under you as to whether or not they think this will help them learn maybe some aspect of their job that they don't know as well as they should right now?
From creative learning, I think we're already doing this. We're finding new equipment, taking new stuff in, learning it every week.
Okay.
Attending meetings, attending webinars, going to trainings. We just finished a code.org workshop, and it was more than an hour a week.
Yeah.
But so I think we're already doing it, and I think it's helpful to learn and grow. And I think all of the staff in creative learning are very supportive of learning and have been doing it. So I think so for creative learning.
And I do want to emphasize, I'll let Amy go for a minute here, but this is not over and above what they're already doing. So if they're already doing this, it's going to incorporate what they're already doing.
So, yeah, just to add to what Natalie said, I think we are already trying to do, at least, perhaps not quite as much, but trying to get in an hour. And we have talked about, like, encouraging at least an hour every month or every week to set aside to be able to do some of these learning opportunities. We've had classes we've signed up for, we've gotten webinars and other programs to work on and learn stuff about. I know Rachel's been working on using lynda.com, our Lynda resource, to learn some new skills as well. So we've been using this time in different ways already, so it kind of incorporates what we've already been trying to do.
Well, I think it's very good that you're giving all the staff the opportunity to keep their skills up and learn the new things as the new technology comes in, because I think that's important, not only for staffing, but also for meeting the requirements of the patrons. So, good work.
Seema Lloyd, for the record, again, real quick. And the reason we don't have part-time staff in here at that requirement is because our part-time staff hours do fluctuate, and that could be actually pretty difficult for us to get an hour in a week. But we do still, in their reviews, give them objectives to take on some different learning tasks and give them time to then complete those tasks as well, paid time.
If there are no further questions or discussion, I would entertain a motion.
I'll move to approve the self-directed learning policy.
I'll second that.
OK, Okay. Those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Moving on to, I'm sorry? That was Diane. Moving on to item D, presentation and discussion on fees, charges, and restriction policy.
I'll go ahead and introduce this. This does fall into Kathy's kind of wheelhouse with access services. But one of the things that we did, we brought this back from a public comment that we had earlier this year. But one of the things that we were also able to not find in our Board of Trustee records was where the board specified that there would be no fines, difference between fees and fines. Overdue fines charged for items, there was still damaged item charges. And so we're bringing this to the board. We do know that it happened around 2011. And so we've put this together as essentially the current practice along with the requests that we're essentially making for you guys to approve this as policy. So in here we have a purpose. We talk about late fees. The late fees are for digital equipment and digital equipment only, and that's $5 a day. We do have record of that. That is in the Premier Library Card application, which is in the Carson City Library policy. We then have overdue or late items that we define that are past the due date, and they do not become long overdue until they are overdue for 90 days, along with materials damaged beyond repair that cannot return into the collection. We have library card restrictions that we've defined here based on those items. So if somebody has an overdue item versus a long overdue item or materials beyond repair. And then we also note that a patron may be charged the actual cost of the material or as a default cost for the material as indicated in the fee schedule below. We don't have very many items in our record that do not have a cost associated with them. But there are some that are older cataloged items that when they were cataloged, they did not have a replacement cost put into that record. And so I think it is important that we show what we would be charging that patron for that item. And that's why that fee schedule is there. And then we also define how a charge might be resolved. Because if they do bring it back to us in good condition, we don't charge them for that item. Are there any questions? We've also included in that fee schedule the cost for a replacement card, which was approved by the board, as well as our costs for technology. So when we sell flash drives to patrons, we charge them the library cost. So the cost to us is what they're charged. Generally, it remains at about, I think it's $8. But if they go up or if they go down, the price might change. So that's why we have that library cost there. But we're not going to charge them the same amount if it's $2 less. We're going to charge them $2 less. Same with the 3D printing. You've already approved a policy on that. Our large format printing has always been at cost. And then our black and white printing and color printing, at some point in time, the board approved these costs, but we're just bringing them back in that fee schedule for you to see. And then when we address other, we have digital equipment and we say see equipment because in that equipment record, we have what that cost is to replace it. AV costs or AV cases, again, that cost varies depending on if it's a 10-disc audiobook or if it's a Blu-ray or if it's a DVD. And then that accidental damage to the maker van or any makerspace associated materials is going to be library costs. So whatever it costs us, you know, if our 3D printer breaks, then you get to pay for the 3D printer. So. And this was adapted from Washoe County Library System's fines, fees, and charges policy.
to me, this seems, I mean, completely standard. You know, I see a lot of policies that we've adopted over the past couple of years, you know, for my tenure on the board, and everything that makes sense to me. Are there any questions or discussion from the board?
Yeah, I have a question. I don't see playaways on here. Are you calling them something else?
Technically, that's digital equipment. Because the Kindles are under digital equipment. Would you consider that digital equipment? I think Amy has the final say on what that is.
We don't circulate them in the same way as digital equipment. We circulate them like books. They do have replacement costs. I mean, none of them are old enough that they don't have a replacement cost in them. I think they usually range about $50 to $70.
See, to me, digital equipment comes under the Premier card.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
And Playaway doesn't. Mm-hmm. So I don't consider that digital equipment. Sorry.
Yeah.
Do we want to amend that to add Playaways at library cost?
Kathy was noting again, all the ones that we have do have an item cost in them. I would treat them, if you want to add a default replacement cost, you can. I don't know if it will become necessary. It is unlikely to be necessary.
So my recommendation is to add Playaway under other and say library cost as the default cost for replacement. So as amended, as including that.
This policy be posted for patrons to see?
It will be posted on our website. We can look at some areas, but I don't know that we have enough space to just post this out at the info desk or whatnot. But it will be posted on the internet once it's approved.
It'll be readily available for patrons.
Correct. And we will happily provide it to them if they have questions.
Well, if there's no other discussion or questions, I would entertain a motion.
I will make a motion that we put this policy into play and as amended with the Playaways added.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay. Those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Moving on to item E. Presentation and discussion on whether or not to consider a percentage increase for hourly part-time library workers for non-CCEA.
Thank you. This is Diane Baker, Department Business Manager for the record. We have this before you because we do have a number of part-time individuals that are very important to the support of what we have. We have the individuals. We do have turnover by the nature of that, but we do have some individuals that do stay with the library in this part-time capacity that don't fall under CCEA. And we wanted to bring before you the option of including a percentage raise or not. We don't have a specific recommendation for you. We would be glad to answer questions. What this does not do, it does not ask or change the dollar amounts that we do have in the part-time salary budgets. So it would be just whether that we would allocate any aspect or any part of that particular budget for raises as individuals do come around for an annual review.
And I do want to note, Sina, for the record, we have requested in the past budget increases in our hourly line item from the city, but even if we do give a percentage increase, that does not mean that we're going to get an automatic increase in our budget under that hourly line item at any point in time.
Is the hourly wage line item, is that exhausted generally?
Yes.
So I guess my question is where do we have room to increase the part-time staff their wages.
So if you would increase their wages, then the amount of hours they work would reduce. That is what would happen.
You're just asking for flexibility to reward certain people?
I'm going to kind of let Diane, I know we received a question from HR on how some of that is determined, and that's why we brought it up to the board. So I'm going to let Diane elaborate on some of that.
And it does come that we do include part-time workers in an annual evaluation and submit those. And if at times when we've had meet standard or above standard, the question had been what raises they're going to be. And because they don't fall under, we have indicated that we, the Library Board of Trustees, has the purview to determine if a raise was to be available or not. So that's how this got started on that, from with regard to a question from you, or from them, so we could bring it to you all.
And we would have to put the opportunity across the board. We would not be able to pick out specific staff members to offer that opportunity to. Because if they receive,
well, if they receive, somebody's doing an exceptional job.
Well, but if so, I mean, you guys could determine that if they receive an outstanding review, then they get a certain percentage. But we couldn't say this person who meets expectations gets nothing, but this person who meets expectations gets 5%. Or this person who's outstanding gets 5%, but this person who's outstanding gets nothing. Does that make sense?
Well, they both get a number.
Correct.
Okay. But, so you're saying they do get annual reviews. You guys did say that.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
CCEA right now, see how well I can remember this contract. I believe it's 4.5% for meets expectations.
I believe it's 3% for meets, 4.5 for above and outstanding is, I know, I think I have
it's
that.
5.5.
Yeah, but... But yeah, it's a percent to a percent and a half between the different merit categories.
And then unclassified staff, which are management level, my level, it is 3, 4, and 5.
And how is it that those raises are handled in the budgetary process?
The city budgets for those raises.
Right.
And so that's included in our budget. It's mm-hmm. not something we have to request from the city. It's budgeted in by the city. When we receive our flat budget, that part is not the flat part.
But the reason part-time workers in this category are not included under CCEA, so none of that officially goes to them. That's an option, it's been explained, that's an option of each department.
Since I'm new, can you guys tell me what CCEA is?
Oh, Carson City Employee Association, okay. And they have signed agreements with the city.
Employment card. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I haven't had time to sit down and figure this out, but if the only way you can give them a raise is to cut the hours that they're going to be allowed to work, are they really gaining anything?
Mm-hmm. Or do you foresee using this as a way to cull employment?
Well, from my perspective, it's difficult when you have a part-time worker who really does strive and does try to really add value to the library, and that we don't have a specific option listed for raises. So that part is where that it does come up, and we have had individuals, even some of our students that have now gone on to college, we had some definite standouts on that part. So, I mean, go ahead.
I would just say that I think that providing them an opportunity for a raise, and I mean, you guys can make a determination on what percentage it is at what level, does potentially give us the opportunity to retain those individuals. And if they've learned their job and they're hard workers, they're theoretically doing more with the amount of time that they are given, and so we're still able to accomplish a lot with those workers, even though it's less number of hours, because they're trained, they're there, we're able to retain them and not have to hire a new worker as well.
And I have a clarifying statement, and correct me if I'm wrong, Diane, but the amount of hours they can work per year would not change. It would change the budget that we have for how many workers we could have. So if we have one really strong, efficient worker for a certain amount per year, it might make it so we don't have three not as qualified or as experienced workers. So they would work the same amount of per year, but be more efficient, and it would be less in the overall budget for part-timers.
That is a direction it can go as well.
And that part-time staff can only work up to 1039. They cannot work over that number of hours. That is that restriction, just because that makes them a part-time worker. CCEA is 3% for meets. Above expectations is 4.5, and outstanding is 5.5.
No, do you need a structured, basically a raise structure like what you just quoted from us, or would it be sufficient for us to say that within the bounds of the part-time staff budget, raises can be assessed by staff, by managing staff?
So we would need a structure. I mean, you could say that it would be the same as CCEA. You could change. You could have something different. You could say it's the same as unclassified. But that way, then we're able to, and they're able to know what that looks like and what that is.
So, are you hiring these people at this, like, the same hourly rate wage? Everybody gets the same when they're hired in.
So it depends. Right now, we're working with HR to move our part-time staff to library shelver and a library clerk. The clerk at kind of a little bit higher level than that shelver position. But a lot of our staff do start at minimum wage.
And so these part-time employees are not moving up from that right now, currently?
What we've done in the past, and until HR asks for a clarification, is essentially every other year, essentially in budget years where we were able to get an increase in the hourly rate, we would offer that we were offering them the CCEA range.
The levels.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or classified or CCEA. I think CCEA.
I think we offered actually unclassified is what was offered in those years. And if it was a year where we had more salary savings and then we had to and were expected to turn back to the city, we would try to do that. But HR has asked for something a little more specific.
So these wages have increased commensurate with the budget? As the budget increases, these wages have increased.
Yes, if we're able to get a increase in, I don't know if it wasn't last year, it was the year before, we were able to get $10,000 increase in our hourly budget. So we provided raises that year.
Is this something that we could table until our next meeting so that we all have a chance to kind of come up with a level of, or a table or something, rather than coming up with it on the spot?
Yeah, to piggyback on Phyllis's question, I do. I think that this would require a bit more of a presentation, something that breaks down, how many part-time staff you have currently, not getting into the minutiae, but what a general wage range is for those people.
And also merit-based raises is what you're talking about.
Correct. And Iris just did note that this is to consider a wage increase, and so if you guys do vote to accept that, then we can provide that report And then you can, because you don't have to vote on the actual, but you can vote on the item.
So we can decide tonight that we're considering it, and then moving forward, we can get a presentation that breaks down wages for part-time
correct.
Staff.
Correct. And I do want to note, and with our part-time staff, it fluctuates. We don't have the same number of part-time staff at any one time. And like with our pending move, we'll be bringing people on board to help temporarily with that. So we will come to you with what our average part-time staff is. And then do you want to finish kind of saying the things that you were looking for so that we can get that on the record too?
Yeah. So, like I said, looking for, in general, how many part-time hours you have currently, what the average wage is across those part-time workers, and if there are any breakdowns, obviously, you know, more data, in my opinion, is always better. And then, you know, kind of an idea of, you know, if we increased X percent of those wage earners by Y percent, you know, say break it down by the current CCEA or unclassified increases, you know, for, you know, say a hypothetical of however many part-time staff you think would be in each of those ranges, what the impact on part-time hours available would be.
Okay.
I think we can do that. That would probably allow me to make a better, more informed decision. So, okay.
So we're gonna make a recommendation to accept this and allow them to come back with more information a little bit second time.
Right. Yeah. So if there is no more discussion at this time, I would entertain a motion.
I move that we accept the fact that we should be giving a raise when possible to the part-time workers, and we will decide what that rate will be after we get a presentation next month on how this all affects. If that makes any sense.
Before you go ahead, I just want to, are you sure you want the motion to be like that? Because what's agendized is for you guys to consider whether right. an increase should happen. So if you word it that way, then you can get the report, consider it, and then make a decision either way. Whereas if you say it the way okay. you just said, it's kind of saying we should give an increase.
Okay.
Right.
I will change that motion to read that we do consider the percentage increase, and then we can further discuss that next month when we get more information.
A little bit of discussion there. I don't know that we're going to be able to bring it back to you in October because we'll be having the discussion a little bit later about moving our meeting up a week, and that's a lot of data to get together. So just an FYI, we'll do it this year, absolutely, this calendar year. But so you are aware, that is a short turnaround for a meeting.
Let's just make it be then for a future meeting this year. We will do that.
I'll second.
Okay. Those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Moving on to item F, presentation and discussion on new floor plan for the library in conjunction with the refresh project.
Okay, so this is the most exciting item on the agenda. I want to see everybody smiling. So what you have in your packet is you have, I wanted to provide you guys and essentially the public with all of the input that staff gave on what the new library should look like. So how this conversation even started was we were on the CIP project for new floors and concrete floors to be exact. And then the conversation started to become, if we have to move everything, kazoom tight, would we put it back in the same place? Or why should we put it back in the same place if we're really going to have to move everything? To give you guys kind of an idea of what that's going to look like, we're about 80,000 to 90,000 items, and we're over 6,000 linear square feet of shelving, or linear feet of shelving. There's no square feet in linear feet. And that's a lot of, that's a lot to move. It is a process, and I'll be updating you in my report a little bit more about that process, though if you have questions absolutely related to this. So that's the first thing you see is the staff input. Now, we had a lot of staff input, a lot of good input, a lot of writing about why some of these changes should be made. And what I want you to understand too is that final layout, which is the last two pages, is a compilation of what our staff recommended. We weren't able to just fully embrace some of the things our staff recommended, as we have one, a limited budget, because we have no money outside of the floors to do anything in our space besides what's in our current budget. But we also have limited shelving, and Kathy can tell you all about some of that if you're interested. But essentially what you're seeing in this floor plan is the shelving we currently have repurposed in other areas, so that we ensure that when we pull all the books back into the building, they're all going to fit on all of those shelves, and that we're going to be able to put those shelves back together. The big things about this floor plan and what it does, and we've received feedback from staff and Kim in the digitorium, is it takes the digitorium space and it makes it dedicated teen space. So we have one teen space instead of two teen spaces. Now, what that would do for staffing is that space would only be open after school hours and on the weekends when we would be able to staff that space. And then over summer, we would also staff that space. But what this layout does let us do is it lets us put two staff members at the information desk. We will be able to still see what's going on with youth. We will still be able, and the teens can use the computers at youth. So if we do have homeschoolers or individuals, they can use that space. And then it puts into the addition all of our nonfiction, adult nonfiction. And then it creates that current teen portal into our adult makerspace, which, like the digitorium, would be open restricted hours, so not 56 hours a week, and would generally need to be monitored by either a volunteer or a staff member because of the type of equipment that will be in that room. So it eliminates the need for us to have one additional desk that we currently have in the library. Upstairs would stay pretty much the same. We'd have our collaboration rooms. We'd have office space where Diane is. Our sound booth, we've got some fun ideas to make that just kind of a floating around the library item. I'm not going to tell you guys what we want to do with it because it's too cool. You have to wait and see. Unless some of you want to help us do it, and then I will let out the secret. And Diane's all over that. So are there any questions, concerns? I think we can all talk about it. You can ask any of our opinions or what our staff were kind of thinking on some of this. We are excited to do the floors. It is going to be a large project.
So I'm kind of looking at this and thinking I could pick from one from column A and one from column B, but not necessarily, because this is all the new building, right? It's the last page.
Diane, can you get him a different copy? Because it does not look like the PDF printed right for him.
Right, so
I have nothing like that.
Yeah, I don't think John has it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
For clarification's purpose, is it the it's the ones that are in color are the ones that we're looking at, correct?
Page 39 is...
Okay.
Yeah, 39 and 40.
I do.
Correct.
Okay.
I like the comment that the entryway should be feng shui.
That's a good one.
And I think that, you know, putting our new book area in the front rather than having this giant, massive desk would help invite people in and invite people to want to participate in what's going on at the library and, you know, take a seat, read a book, look at new books, pick up their hold.
And it makes a lot of sense having the youth area right there next to the digitorium. I like that.
As someone who works in the audiovisual shelving, I'm assuming those two round circles are detectors.
So, good eye and good catch, and apparently my microphone is going crazy. So, forgive me. I'm going to move to a new microphone. Is this better? This is better. Okay, so what you're seeing there is a wall that we would be putting up. We're not quite sure. It's probably coming out of our operating budget, but we're going to work with facilities to figure out what is the best use of that. So that will restrict people from being able to just take a DVD. They have to check it out before they leave the space. And the gates are expensive. The gates are around $8,000 to $9,000 installed, but we will be repurposing the gate at the Secret Garden for the AV because that is much more of an issue than people checking out materials and going out and using them in the Secret Garden.
Fabulous idea.
And so the upstairs is going to remain the same?
Correct. And that's, you don't see that in your packet because it's everything that's currently there will stay there. So we've got magazines, newspapers, the adult portal computers, the premier computers, the training hubs, the training hub, and the collaboration rooms. The bottom of the addition is your page 40. So it's the back of what you're holding.
The only change to upstairs would be the makerspace upstairs would free up another collaboration room upstairs that's a larger collaboration room. So if anything, it provides more space for meeting rooms upstairs.
And I do want to note, as always, these are our predictions of the shelving and everything that we do have. And so adjustments when we are moving back into the space would definitely need to be made. But your direction here today would allow us to plan for this layout and try to execute this to the best of our ability.
I have a question. You made a comment that you put the teens in one area. Okay, now how does that reflect on this? Because I'm seeing the digitorium, and I don't see something.
All of that on page 39.
This is current. This is the new. This is the front and back right
now. Oh, I see.
So
okay, so for clarification, everything that's in the teen space currently, technology-wise, would then be going into the digitorium. So you can see that on the east wall of the digitorium, where we have the computers that are currently in the teen portal.
So this basically is nothing new in the way of shelving or equipment. It's just putting it in a different place, which we hope will be more efficient and better used.
There are a few new items, like the wall, for the AV, and there's a couple pieces of shelving that we're going to probably need to purchase or build, or, you know, the prison build shelves. So it's, and we're also going to have to modify the current Kennedy seating. We're going to have them kind of chop some of that off and round it out so that it does fit there and not in front of the safety door. But for the most part, we're doing everything with what we currently have.
Is this going to, because I know you had mentioned earlier that being able to do the new flooring under where the information desk is now requires moving it, and if they move the current one, it's going to fall apart.
Okay, thank you for mentioning that. We do, so the information desk as it currently is will be gone. It is a compilation of many different desks at different times anyway. And that is something that we'll be looking for outside funding to try and help put together. But it's, again, not something that's impossible for, say, the prison to build if necessary. But we want to try to bring something in that is movable just in case, even if it's difficult to move, not installed and permanently there. Having that information desk in that location too, I just want to note, gives a better line of sight for staff to be able to see what's also going on down further. And when we do this, we will then also put our surveillance monitor up at the information desk so that staff can see what's going on in the unstaffed portions of the back part of the library.
This is Kathy, for the record. I'd like to mention that the young adult collections that are currently in the teen area will be integrated, not really integrated into the rest of the collections, but put next to the rest of the collections. So you will see that YA fiction is near adult fiction, and we do have a lot of adults that like to read YA and vice versa. So graphics and manga and fiction will be out in with the rest.
Will there be any weeding done before the move?
Uh-oh. Yes, there will.
Oh, dear.
Again, we're using our current shelving, so for the most part, it's just going to be to make moving easier, so that we're not packing up anything that we probably ought to be getting rid of anyway. Mm-hmm. I think we do have to reduce nonfiction shelving by a small amount to fit it into the smaller building.
And I did have an interesting time. I went through and I weeded some of our nonfiction collection, and there are definitely some titles that are of a certain age that have not circulated that don't need to be in our collection anymore. We are a public library. We're a popular public library, and incorrect medical information we don't need to be providing to people.
This is kind of a silly question, maybe. What is the little thing that looks like a sun or a fried egg at the corner of the Nevada section?
That's a tree, okay. I think. Yeah, it's a tree.
All right, thank you.
It's a tree that we all love as staff in the library, and so we want to keep it in the library.
Add a little nature into the new one.
With this floor plan, do you foresee any issues with patrons making their way into the staff area, considering it's straight ahead as you enter the library?
So the whole pickup shelves will be taller shelves, so there will be some kind of separation there. There was a door there at one time. I don't think the city has the door anymore, but I mean, it's something that we can explore, being able to provide a true stopgap there. I think it will also, the way that this is now, it will be easier for staff to move through the library and move to maybe other parts of the library they need to get to. Currently, when there's a line and you walk through that door, you know, you have patrons who kind of expect you to help them, but, you know, maybe you're needed on desk upstairs so the next person can come downstairs. And so we also kind of want to move that away so staff can have that free flow of needing to move into the staff space and out of the staff space without having patrons right there also.
There is no copy machine.
Actually, it's now in the where the nonfiction got moved. You'll see copy. There's a copy machine and an info center and a self-check. The info center idea is to have like a little business center where we have a scissors and a stapler and a hole punch and all the things that people come to the info desk to borrow could be there chained so they stay there, but are available for use, pencils and pens and scrap paper and all that kind of thing. But the copy machine would be there, and having a counter next to it would make it more convenient for the patrons to be able to set their items down that they're trying to copy.
On the copy machine item as well, we do have a document station upstairs that's actually cheaper to take a scan and print from. It's essentially a copy machine. High Sierra Business Solutions owns that copy machine. We don't see any profit from it. They provide the paper. They provide all of those pieces. They have not seemed interested in replacing that copier with anything newer. So if at any time they decide to remove that copy machine, we won't be replacing that copy machine unless there's significant patron feedback.
This might be outside of the scope of this item, but you know, we are talking about putting up walls and things like that. Are we planning on building that into the budget for the renovation, or where do we foresee those funds coming from?
So we have a line item that's called facility contract, and we don't use that often. It's generally used when we have city, so, you know, we're going to, you know, bake cookies or whatever, and have city facilities do some of that work for us. Now, that line item is where that gets charged to, and we do have some budget in there that generally does revert if we haven't used that for any other purpose. Right now, so in my office, which is where it says the staff area and the info desk, how that's one big room, that used to be one big room. The city built a wall for us and made it two rooms. You'll also see on that the addition page where it says office and supplies, that room was also not an office and the city built a wall there. So they can do those types of tasks for us at a definitely discounted cost than it would be to have a contractor come out and do those.
And then just piggybacking off of that, are you taking out the wall that's behind in the staff area behind the info desk? Because I know there's a lot of mechanical back there.
We're not. It's just not indicated on there. But currently that is my office. Diane and I are trying to explore, even in this floor plan, ways that we can be nearer in our offices because there are some difficulties communicating sometimes on some of our items. So we're trying to see if we can't facilitate this in the process, but we wanted to bring to you the public spaces and definitely get your input on those.
I see two holds pickup areas. Is that correct?
That was an oops. At this point, the holds pickup is over by the self-checkout, and where you see all the new books, that is actually book display, more book display.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And I do want to note and give credit, Kathy did design this and put this all together, and every reiteration and change that staff gave us input, changed it to reflect that as well.
Are we supposed to vote on this today?
Yes.
So I have...
That's part of the reason you guys received the packets early.
So you took away the detectors going out to the secret garden. What's your... I understand why you're putting them where you're putting them. So what happens to the secret garden, or why don't you think that's an issue anymore?
One of the items with the detectors where they are right now, if you're browsing in the Spanish collection, you make that detector go off all the time. We have had instances where patrons have unplugged the detector to charge their own device because of where the detector's plugged in. But we've also not seen... So historically, what I was told was that the secret garden was closed because people would go out into the secret garden without checking out items and throw them over the fence to then steal them. I have not seen any attempts to do so. I mean, you can get around a gate. I'm not going to tell you how on public record, but you can get around a gate. And so we just really haven't seen an issue with that and don't think that that's an issue moving forward with moving the gate. I actually think that it will be more helpful with the AV collection because then before they leave that space, they have to have AV checked out. And from what I was told, the main items that would be thrown over the fence were AV items. Mm-hmm. So if they want to throw it over the fence after they check it out, we'll talk to them about their damage to the case.
So you don't have any concern about books going out that way?
At this time, I don't. I mean, in the future, you know, we'll definitely watch for that. We do now have security cameras, which makes it a lot easier to catch and monitor any of that if it does happen.
So any of the security cameras have to be moved with this?
Some of them will have to be adjusted, but none of them will have to be permanently moved to another location.
I like it.
And like I said, there's going to be some tweaks on based on how we can put it all back together. So, I mean, we are looking for you to approve this, but, you know, with that contingency of staff can make that best decision when they're putting it back together. If there's an issue, that we can then resolve that issue and not have to come to a board meeting before we can open the library back up.
Right. This will be generalized guidance.
I would be interested in the librarian's input and the ratio of books damaged versus DVDs and audiobooks stolen as far as loss to the library.
Those numbers are tricky to find. Do you have some...
We definitely see more long overdue items that are AV related that just don't come back or come back late. They come back 6 months late. But generally damaged books are coming back. You know, their dog ate it. It was
personally
moist.
My gut feeling is you're going to have a greater AV loss than book loss just in the years I've been volunteering, and that's only 2 hours a week.
Well, and so based on what we've seen, we've caught stingrays pulled off of our devices before, which are the RFID, in more cases than books, though we have caught some books, but it's not nearly, you know, we're like 10 to 1.
I asked the question so it would get on the record.
Mm-hmm. Understood. I will say the AV, specifically video, is one of the highest turnover collections, which means for its size, each item is getting checked out more. They and in my experience as well, over many years has been, for some reason, people steal or want to take out without checking out DVDs more. I don't know why. Sometimes they sell them to the pawn shops. They're worth virtually nothing, but they do it.
So, Amy, in your opinion, this layout would probably be more beneficial, preferable?
I think it'll work. One of the things, are you talking about the layout overall?
Specifically,
specific to this AV area. Specific to the AV area, it will secure the AV area much more securely, much better than it is now. With even like a, I don't think we were thinking about like a wall to the ceiling for that area. More like a,
right.
You know, tall enough that you can't walk through it, but low enough that you can see over it pretty easily. Anyway, so we do think it will secure that area much better, and it'll be right there next to the info desk where staff can view it very easily, which right now is not the case. So we do think with our layout right now, the areas where, and we have put cameras in these locations, but the areas where we find evidence of things being nefariously removed from the premises are places that we can't see very well in the AV section and kind of some of the back corners. So this does alleviate some of those issues.
And I do want to add, we're coming upon an LSTA grant cycle again, and so some of the things that we are looking at, Kathy has looked into, they're called, and you can kind of see it on here, it says Blu-ray Cube, and some different potential options on checking out AV where, you know, the case is empty, they check out the Blu-ray so that we don't have that staff time associated with it, and then the disc pops out, and then they can put that in the case and then go on their merry way because they've already checked it out. But some of that technology and some of the funding for that is going to come after we're able to do this process.
Are you talking about something like the Red Box?
It's somewhat similar, not quite. Right now we're having kind of conversations back and forth because we don't know that their RFID system, we think it might confuse patrons. We don't want to have multiple different ways to check out items. So that's what we're kind of looking at now. But we do have some time to kind of figure out what that solution is. There's also lockable cases that we've kind of explored where it won't unlock until you check it out. But a single unlocker to do that, which has RFID included in it, is about $5,000. And so they are pricey. But we are kind of weighing those options. But I think that for now, this gives us the ability to better secure what we have. It's not the best solution, but it's a solution that we can come up with our limits currently.
I'd like to say what we usually do when we approve this stuff is we can always change it in the future. Correct?
Correct.
Are we ready for a motion?
If there's no further discussion or questions, I would entertain a motion.
I move that we approve the planned rearrangement of the library as presented to the trustees.
I'll second.
All right, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Moving on to item G, presentation and discussion on closing for 2 hours on a Friday for active assailant training.
Okay, so I spoke with the sheriff probably about a month ago now. In August, there was a unfortunate incident at a library, at a public library in New Mexico, where there was an active assailant, and staff, you know, I mean, it's the library world, staff, word gets around, and staff did come to me again about having active assailant training or active shooter training in the library. And so I contacted the sergeant that's in charge, and he thinks that it's possible to do it in about 4 hours. And so why do you say that there's only 2 hours of closure? We feel that we can bring everybody in 8:30 in the morning on a Friday, go through that process, and then be able to open for the remainder of that day. Friday is the best day because, and we can provide for time for Kim and Rachel, who are our full-time, two full-time staff that don't work on Friday, to be there rather than try to close in the middle of the day to arrange something like this, or on a Monday when we have to bring all of the Tuesday through Saturday staff in. So a Friday is the best day, and we'd only have, so instead of opening at 10, we would open at 12 is what that looks like. The reason we didn't pick a day to have you approve a specific day is working with the sergeant. He asked for a little bit of flexibility in being able to arrange that day. We definitely will know at least 2 weeks before so we can let the members of the public know, but that way he has everyone available. He's also requested that board members attend and participate if you would like to attend. The training goes through a seated training, so in a classroom style setting, and then it goes actually into, you're in the library, you're in your space in the library, and they come through the library and shoot blanks in the library. That second piece of that, staff do have to sign a waiver that the DA's office does have for trainings like this to ensure that they are willing to participate. The first part of the training, everybody can attend them.
So I've been through a few trainings like that. My question is, considering the previous action item that we were looking at, that we're looking at rearranging the library, and I see in the action item that the goal is to organize and host the training before the end of November, which would put it before we're moving everything around at the library. Is that correct?
It is, and they did say that they would be able to come back and do a refresher training once we moved items around, but staff made it urgent enough to me that I think that it's something that we need to not put off just for ease of putting it off because we're moving the space. Mm-hmm. I want them to feel safe in their work environment, and I think that this training can help get there.
Okay, I move that we do schedule this kind of training, but we on a Friday, closing for 2 hours, but leave the date open so you can make the arrangements with the sergeant in charge.
I'll second.
Okay, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
And then I am going to ask that board members who are interested in attending that training to let me know a list of Fridays in October and early, or October and November. There's really only two Fridays in November that would work, but that you would be available so we can try and get you there if possible. If you could just email that to me, we can get that arranged.
Thank you very much. Moving on to item six, the library director administrative reports.
Okay, so this meeting, you don't have a written report from me, mainly because we did have so many action items on this agenda, and we were trying to get the agenda and supporting material out to you guys as soon as possible because there were some big decisions on the agenda. So I will give my report after we talk about the budget, but it's going to just be verbal. So in the budget report packet, you're going to see the library funding. Our internal city revenue is the same. Our grant funds have gone up some here because we do have our approvals of our grants. We don't have them necessarily funded, but we have everything ready to be reimbursed for all of that grant, those grant funds. So we've included that there. We've shown what we've had coming in from the gift fund and then into the gift fund from the Friends of the Library. So then on the second page, you're going to see the expenditures. And two of those numbers are so low that they're not even showing. Obviously on there, and then the gift funds, those are expenditures from the money that the Friends of the Library has given us, not from the Friends of the Library. Was that an incorrect? Was that invoice. Anyway, so we have $207,000 expended in the city's general fund, and I'm going to let Diane clarify the expenditures out of the gift fund.
Okay, so the items listed in the gift fund, those are there was an invoice charged to the gift fund that is in process of being accounted to the correct, put into the correct account. So it registers here as an expenditure, but it is not a true expenditure to the gift fund.
But you're seeing the city reporting that we have. That's what we're using to report to you. So the breakdown of the city expenses, you're not going to see a lot hitting on here that aren't just like that general month-to-month expenditure of staff, insurance, some of our specific items that we charge, like janitorial supplies. We do have some hitting in books and periodicals. Finally, as kind of these months close after P cards, which are the city credit cards, are submitted, we're seeing some of those expenditures start to hit. Some of those expenditures like did take place though in August, not necessarily in September, or in July, not necessarily September. But that is where we are currently. And in, I'm just going to point out, in hourly seasonal, we're at 7,920. Generally, we do see an increase in that when it is over summer, because we do have more staff in the summer than we do at other parts of the year. Okay, so then the next one that you're going to see in pie chart form here is our grant funds. Our state collection development has since been approved and funded, so we will be adding that for our October meeting. But what I do want to tell you about those funds is last year we were about $4,400, and this year we are a little over $10,000, and that is due to the legislature passing SB 549. Diane and I met with our legislators about that bill, as well as Washoe County, Las Vegas, Clark County, and that goes to the state library and then from the state library to us. So what you see there is the increase of the work that we did this spring. So then our community development grant, we have expenditures in that now. We also have our NASA at my library, and then our statewide reading or summer learning challenge. That's the community development piece. So that is that an invoice that needed to be moved over and was charged to the wrong account?
That's correct. Okay.
And then we have not expended in the Makerspace grant. I do want to just kind of give you guys a little bit of an update. I spoke with Natalie about this last Friday, but we are going to be moving forward. We're going to be putting some change requests into the state library. Because of our closure, it kind of puts a really big, nothing's going to happen during that period of time. And so we're working on making sure that we can still fulfill the grant, but doing it in a timeline that's going to work for us. When we do pop up, when we are closed, we are intending in using the mobile maker van that we have as long as the weather permits. So we will be looking at scheduling that as well. And I am hoping to have a schedule of what that's going to look like for you guys, for the community, at our October meeting, so that we know when we're going to be closed, because right now we're still a little unsure of what that contract looks like, but I'll give you an update in my report, and what we're going to be doing when we're closed. So the next item that you're going to see is gift fund, and it kind of just outlines here for you, you know, the collection from the Friends of the Library, it's gift fund. That's the one I think that is that the invoice that you were talking about? Okay. that needs to be moved over. And then we have the detail of the gift fund. Are there any questions on the budget so far? So moving on to my director's report, I do want to make you guys aware. So we had the position, essentially it was Aubrey's position. Maria promoted, essentially lateraled into Aubrey's position. And we were hiring for that other librarian. After consideration, it unfortunately did not work out. And so we went back to a review of that list of candidates and decided to open that position back up again. And so that position is open, and it will close this weekend. We're also hiring for a library assistant. We had a senior library assistant at the library leave and offered that up as a promotional opportunity for one of our current library assistants. And that was offered to Haley Swift. So she is now a senior library assistant as of tomorrow. And then we will be interviewing for a library assistant candidate on Monday of this next week. We also, so I attended with Maria, who's one of our librarians and one of our library assistants from Creative Learning, the Computer Core 20th anniversary event. That was at the Governor's Mansion this last weekend. It was a good event. I think that a lot of what we're doing in coding and related to technology, it's looking to be like they're gonna be one of our new partners potentially, or we're at least going to go after that to see what we can't arrange with them. And you know, we're maintaining our relationship with the Boys and Girls Club as well. I had the opportunity to attend their luau this, I guess that was like early September. So, and that was a good opportunity. They're doing some great things there, and we want to make sure that we're continuing to partner with them and reach those students. And then I have a couple more items. The Institute of Museum and Library Services, librarians can apply to essentially be a reviewer of grants, and I was asked to review national leadership grants, so obviously with no conflict of interest, but I will be reviewing those grants. We have applied in the past and not received those grants, so I think this is a good opportunity to see what they expect, what they like to see. And they will be actually flying me out to DC to do that. So I will be doing that in mid-November. But I think that that's a good opportunity for us to potentially go into a new area of grant application. I then have the community, so Carson City Library Community Connections, and I'm not gonna steal Diane's thunder too much here because she's got a lot to talk about. But I'm gonna pass this around. We didn't have enough printed for each of you to have one, but we will definitely get you one. You do have one. Yay, we got them. Yes. This is great. I love it. Kat was like, we'll try to get you it. We'll try. So this community connections was provided because we did have a visit from a staffer for Senator Cortez Masto, and I will let Diane say why. But we are also working with Kat and Nevada Momentum on an annual report. Or biannual report to provide to you as well. This specifically was a specific purpose. The annual report is going to be more general and have lots of different information. LSTA funding and federal funding is what funded all of the programs initially in this handout. So are there any questions? And your names are on the back. Carson City Board of Trustees.
Thank you very much, Steve. Moving on to Item 7, our other administrative reports, starting with Grants Admin.
Great. This is Diane Baker for the record, and what you see at the start of the report is highlighting some of the project management, how we got started already, and you can see it if you haven't taken a close look already. The exterior of the library has been painted. I think it looks fabulous. We did work with facilities. We had a certain paint palette that we were interested in. They had a different one, but we actually came to a great compromise, and I think it turned out very well. We had a great crew that came in, worked around our open hours and all the things that needed to be done, and did a few extras for us as well. They painted the front book drop, and they also painted the pillar part of the electronic sign to match the light color. So yeah, they just threw those in, and so we were very pleased with how that turned out. The other is something that you voted on previously regarding no smoking within 25 feet of the building that has been put in place. The city ashtrays, those heavy-duty things that, you know, they had to bring a special lift to take them and move them. They have been moved. Two of them have been moved out to the designated smoking area. We have put up some of the signs, and we did get additional signs from Health and Human Services to put around the building as well. So that is in place and looking good. Sina did mention that we are moving forward with Public Works because of the size of the project that we're doing with the interior and the like. We have been assigned a project manager from Public Works, and we have had initial meetings with a committee from including Public Works and Facilities and our library staff, and they will be the basis of who we are working with as we're going over the logistics, and there's going to be a lot of logistical things to set in place as we move forward with our refurbish. One of the things, and actually that just had a stop-in meeting with one of the people from Facilities, Ron Reed, from head of Facilities, stopped by my office yesterday and confirmed a couple of things. Just to give you the latest update is they did confirm, and that's what you saw in the plans, they did confirm they will be doing both buildings and, for the cement flooring. When we initially went out to bid and got the information and they were going to go out to bid, it was for the main library only. They were able to, with the preliminary information that they got back from some of the contractors, it was determined and they just formalized and said they will be doing both of the buildings, and that was yesterday. The other aspect that they confirmed were questions that we had put on the table regarding storage of our materials after we packed them up, and we are going to be getting the pods that are going to be placed in the library parking lot. So yeah, so that much has been confirmed with that group, and so that has been a positive working group that we have had with the committee from Public Works. Small thing, we're wrapping up grants, the ones that had been operated in the last fiscal year. All those things are due to the State Library. We're on track to have that to them next Monday, the 2nd. Now, last but not least is some of the cool things that we've been working on. The National Medal, we are putting going forward with having the Carson City Library nominated for the National Medal for Museum and Library Services. And we've been going through that process of working with our legislators and also with our other community supporters for different letters of support. And in that process, the contact that we had with Senator Cortez Mastos, their Reno office, they were very interested in having a chance to come see. So a couple of representatives from the office were at the library last Wednesday, and we had a very positive interaction with the individuals that came, very enthusiastic. And the last piece of the, I guess, of our conversation, after we had been able to demonstrate and show what we had available, and was unsolicited, was that they indicated that they have to get the senator down to come and see our library. So that was got us all with that attention. So the medal information is due to also on Monday, our magic day of October 2nd. We do have, I think, all but one of the letters from our congressional delegation of support, and I have three other support letters to include with the nomination information as well. So on that part, did you have any questions regarding the project management, the National Medal, any on those things? Okay, exciting times. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great. Excellent news. Thank you very much, Diane. Moving on to the Access Services update.
So, Kathy Rush, Access Services Manager, for the record. Diane, that's a really hard report to follow. Okay, so on to a couple of things about Access Services that I wanted to highlight for this month's meeting. I've mentioned holds that we handle in the past, but I think a lesser known aspect to that is that every single day a staff person pulls a list of requests and goes through the library, pulling them off the shelf one by one, checking them in. And that averages about 35 items a day, and about two-thirds of those go out to the other Nevada libraries that we share our catalog with. The other third typically go to our shelves for our patrons. It can take up to about an hour to complete that process, and we always try and get it done in the morning if we can before we open, because as patrons come into the library and start selecting materials, they could very easily select an item that has a hold on it. When that happens, our procedure is always to allow them to check it out because they found it, they have it in hand, and then we reinstate the hold for the person that we were going to pull it for, and they'll just have to wait until it comes back. So that is how that works. And then I also wanted to highlight our lost and found. I've said that the strategic goal that maps to is facilitating connection, because of course we're always trying to connect people back with the items that they leave, and it's amazing how many items they leave at the library. But in the past, we had one drawer that everything went into with a little post-it, and it was very time-consuming to keep it all straight, and items would stay in there a lot longer than they should have. But our librarian, Maria Cuesta, when she was in charge of the information area, came up with a really good idea of dividing the drawer in half, labeling each half with the current month and the previous month, and items simply go into whichever side of the drawer they were found in either of those months, and then when we change over the old month to the next month, that's when we go through and say, well, these have been in here, and it's time for them to move on, where we try to take usable items to Goodwill, and unfortunately, sometimes we do have to discard some things. But that's how that works, and we do get people asking daily, oh, do you have a lost and found? I think I left whatever, and we do reunite a lot of items back to their owners. Are there any questions?
Thank you very much, Kathy. Moving on to our collection development report.
Amy Lauder, Collection Development Manager, for the record. Back to Diane's question from earlier, yes, we are weeding. We are always weeding. We are weeding a little bit more than usual right now due to the upcoming moving of everything in the building. As you said earlier, we have about 90,000 items that we own. Not all of those are on the shelf. I should have looked up exactly how many are on the shelf. I think it's between 60 and 70,000 that are actually in the building at any given time. But a good chunk of them are checked out. So those things are pretty safe from weeding unless they come back and they're dirty or worn. Some things just die. They wear out. And if we look at it and say, this one has served its purpose, we need a new one, we'll put a note on that and get a new one. But other than that, so we are targeting, especially nonfiction, because again, I do think we have to reduce that a small amount. All of our other shelving is just crowded. We're not reducing shelving for the majority of our collections. But they are very full, because just for the fiction collection, which is one, it's not the largest collection, but it's one of the larger collections, the adult fiction, we're getting 70 to 85 new books per month, and that's not counting the lease, which is another 70, yeah, it's another 70 books, actually. We get 100 lease books a month, and I think it's, Rachel told me 70, 80, but I think it's a little bit more. And then there's a similar amount for nonfiction and all of the children's collections and other collections as well. So we're getting in a lot of stuff all the time. So because we do not have a magic expanding building from Harry Potter, I think somebody else mentioned earlier, we do have to cycle some things out. So again, some of them just wear out. That's a pretty easy decision to get those out of there. We're also putting effort in to target items that are outdated. As Sina was mentioning, sometimes you walk through and go, why is that still there? So those are often relatively easy to find, but a little bit trickier. And then also identifying items that are just not being used by our patrons anymore and that are not being used heavily. So we're our whole collection development team, and Sina's been getting in on the action, and some of our other staff have shown interest in learning about this process as well. Are identifying the criteria we want to use for each collection to make sure it's full of things that people want to use that are in good condition, full of good information, and then moving the things that we no longer need out. And actually found that the part moving it out of the building is the hardest part, that we go through a pretty thorough process once we've decided, we'll pull things to review, then you decide whether it stays or not. And then the items that we've decided to withdraw, we will go through. Nobody likes to throw books away, so we like to, we work with a company called Better World Books, where we will check our books against their system to see if they need them and see if we can sell them on to them. And then once we are able to do that, we pack them up in boxes, get them shipped out, and eventually we get a little bit of money. It's not a ton of money, but it's a little bit back for some of those. And that keeps our shelves nice and clean and happy. So that's what that process looks like. I thought it was a good time to highlight that because that will be coming up, and I'm sure people always have questions about what happens to books when we take them out of the library. The other thing that's been going on this month is school started again. So I've been working also with the Creative Learning Department a little bit to promote some of our homework resources, of which we have many. Some of them, actually a lot of them, are provided by the state for use by all of the students in the state, such as EBSCOhost and Learning Express. Some of them are resources that we pay for, such as Tutor.com and the Gale Virtual Reference Library. So again, some of these resources like EBSCOhost, the students have heard of before, but they don't always know how to access them and how to use them. So it was really nice to get together with some of our students that come into the Digitorium on a regular basis and say, hey, here's all the things that we have available. And I was like, they're not going to be interested. There's like some ladies talking to us. They were so excited. These are really sweet kids that just want to learn stuff and do their homework. It was great. So they learned how to get access to these resources. Again, if you go Google lynda.com, it's going to say, hey, give us money, and so you can sign in. We don't want them to do that. We want them to go to our website, get their library card, and you have access to all these things for free. You don't have to worry about any of that, so it's all right there. So we've made some new flyers, got some outreach going, and so it's been really nice to make sure we get those resources available to all of our students. Does anybody have any questions about any of those things?
All very good information, but no questions.
All right, thank you, folks.
Thank you very much, Amy. Moving on to our creative learning update.
Natalie Wood, creative learning manager for the record. I have a question to ask you guys to start out my report. Who has gone to the story stroll? Story stroll. Okay, so we have partnered with Parks and Recreation to do a story stroll at Carson River Park. That means I purchased two books, cut them apart, laminated them, put them on stakes, and have a story out in the park for you to go through and read. That started on September 10th. It ends on Saturday. So you only have 2 days to go do it. We have lost about 3 pages to the wind. They went on their own little adventure. The story we chose, you can go through and read it without having those pages, so it's just fine.
Did you choose Wind in the Willows?
It was a bilingual book, very colorful, so it would work for our whole community. Parks and Rec approved of it because it was a nature book. It was a lot of fun. One really fun thing about that is Parks and Rec magazine, their executive editor, I believe is the title, actually wrote an article on the story stroll and our partnership, so we should be seeing that magazine out soon with our article in it. Once I have it, I will share. It was a good partnership, promoted not only reading and library services, but utilizing outdoor spaces in our community.
And I'm going to just pop in here to say thank you for Natalie and her team to do this. Creative Learning participated in what's called Outside the Lines. And so it's all about libraries trying to get outside of what you traditionally think a library might be doing, but still in the same vein of learning of what a library is promoting. And so I really want to say thank you to her team because they are the ones who made this successful.
The other thing that I have is the Family Reading Program with Northern Nevada Literacy Council. This will be our third year with them partnering for it. We have a great program set up, a once-a-month story time to promote learning habits in the home. The students the participants also will take home a book to build their home library to encourage literacy and reading. It was very successful last year. We went from 15 to 20 books, so we'll be able to give away 20 books once a month. When we are closed, we will still be utilizing that program. We will go to the Children's Museum for one of them and the Train Museum for another one to continue those options when we're closed and make sure that we're sharing the resources outside our community too. Any questions?
Thank you very much, Natalie. Moving on to our Teen Leadership Council report. Do we have a report?
We do. I'll be reporting for them. They just don't want to be here this late. Home, dinner time, homework time, all that good stuff. So as Amy mentioned, school's in session. The Digitorium is open. We have hired 2 Digi interns for the school year. One has started and has been trained. We're waiting on the other one for another week or so before they can start. So if you want to come and meet them, they'd love to meet you. They're doing great so far, learning very quickly. We have lots of projects that we're working with other departments too, which I think is going to be fun and kind of new for the interns to learn about other library stuff while promoting their skills. With that being said, our PSAs, public service announcement lessons have started. Kim has been over at the high school quite a bit. They're going to start coming and touring us soon for their field trips. A lot of work, but it's going very smooth. Partnership still growing strong. The other one is we have a good following of volunteers that are coming consistently, working on regular projects. Cleaning our Legos, which get used every week, organizing, cleaning those. Yes, they do. They are always waiting for Lego Club to start. We are never there on time. According to them, even if they're 10 minutes early, we're not on time. But helping out with programs and just being there to help out with other services. A few of them actually are interested in doing more volunteering. So I'll be working with the other departments to see what you guys need because they would like to do some shelving and other services to volunteer. So we have some good volunteers this year.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Natalie. See, moving on to item 8, board member announcements and requests for information. Did any board members have announcements?
I think Jeremy might have an announcement, but I'm going to remind him what that is. Because he's like, this is my conversation with Iris about where we can put this in. I did email Jeremy asking if we could change the meeting of the October meeting so that it wasn't October 26th, which is the Thursday before Nevada Day, which is also the fundraiser for, is it for advocates? So for is for domestic violence awareness. And it's a dodgeball tournament over at the MAC. And so we are wanting to participate in that as a library as much as possible. If there's any board members who want to participate, let me know. But so the request was made to Jeremy to change that date. We were able to confirm the third Thursday, which is October 19th. It is a Board of Supervisor meeting, but we would be able to start this meeting at 6 o'clock on that day in this room, if that is amenable to essentially the board in an announcement, because the chair gets to make that decision. So.
That was my announcement. So if that works for the other members of the board, that's probably what we're going to move forward with for next month. I had completely forgotten about that, and my announcement was actually going to be that I wasn't going to be at the next meeting because I'll be in Ely. I will be here the week prior to that, so I won't be able to participate in the dodgeball tournament, unfortunately. But did any other board members have any announcements or requests for information? Okay. Oh, yeah.
What's happening in November?
So generally, we don't have a November 4th Thursday board meeting. We generally do a November-December meeting combined. The room is available on the 5th Thursday in November on November 30th. So that's what we're looking at for November, but it can be a December meeting. We would like to have it while we are still open and before we close so that we can focus on that piece once we're closed.
So only one meeting in November, December?
That's correct. That is what normally happens. And that's a good point. The Board of Trustees is required to have 10 meetings in the year. So you've used up one. And so then you can still do the combined November-December meeting.
Okay. In that case, we can move on to item 9, public comment. If any members of the public wish to address the Library Board of Trustees, now would be the time. Seeing none, we'll move to item 10, adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn? We are adjourned.